This is Dr. Holly Lucille's Mindful Medicine. Here's Dr. Holly Lucille.
Hi, all you mindful listeners. Thank you so much once again for spending part of your day with us. Ladies, this is all for you. Actually, you know what? Forget about that. This is for anybody, but because we're going to be talking about Heart Smart for women. But we all have women in our lives, whether we are one or not. And it's kind of interesting to me because I have to tell you, heart disease is still the number one killer of both men and women. And it's a really important topic. And I've got a really smart lady who is the co-author of a new book called Heart Smart for Women. And we're going to dig deeper into that fact that one in three women will die from heart disease. And that is higher than all types of cancer fatalities. And we hear about cancer all the time and we see the pink ribbon and all of that stuff. But this is a big issue. But better than just talking about it, Dr. Stacey Ellen Rosen is going to help us understand what we can do about it to decrease our risk. So I want to introduce her. She is the vice president of the Katz Institute for Women's Health at North Shore Health System and practicing cardiologist. She's a fellow of the American College of Cardiology, the American College of Physicians, and the American Society of Echocardiography. I think that's how you say it. Very, very smart lady. Dr. Rosen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah, and you were voted twice to be among the Long Island top 50 most influential women. I love that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and so that's how you say it, right? Echocardiography.
Echocardiography.
Yes, echocardiography. Echo. It's a very long word.
I look at it.
Yes, obviously I've said it.
Well, we could
I looked at it. Echo. Yes, an echocardiogram. So it's true. So who was your co-author on this book, Heart Smart for Women?
Dr. Jennifer Mieres. Jen and I have been both cardiologists here at Northwell Health together for over 20 years. Jen is really one of the most well-respected women's heart health advocates in the country.
So well,
together,
both of you did
put this book together.
Yeah, and it's great. You did a wonderful job doing it. And because in just 6 weeks, you've kind of helped and planned out this a way that women can actually make permanent changes towards a healthy heart. But let's just get off the bat here and talk about why heart health is so important for women.
Yeah, heart disease is the number one killer of women and has been basically forever since we've been, you know, finding the information. 80% of it is preventable and 90% of women have one risk factor. So when you talk about something that's everywhere, this is it. Heart disease is something that we are almost all of us at risk for, and there are so many things that we can do every day to lower our risk.
It always blows me away, the stats, and also this point, that fact that, you know, we truly have been talking about it for quite some time. I mean, certainly my entire career. And when I go to see, you know, the stats each and every year continuing to climb, that is what really grabs my attention. Like, how can we have so much information and really now more than ever, so much information about how to be well or get well if you want to. And then these stats of these chronic diseases continue to be on the rise. So when we're talking about risk factors for heart disease, what are they for women?
Well, what's so important, and as you said, I can just give you a fact that I always love to talk about with regard to, you know, we've known this for so long. So there have been a series of studies over about a decade or so in New York, and a group of scientists and clinicians at Columbia actually asked 1,000 women what their number one risk of death and disability was. And when they first started doing this a little more of a decade ago, only about 35% of women got the answer right for heart disease. So the last time this was done, just a few years ago, we went to the low 50%. So that's some movement. But when we look at Latinas and African-American women, still fewer than 40% of women know that heart disease is the number one risk. And even for all comers, to be only still a little bit more than one in two women know means that we've still got a lot of work to do. And the risk factor assessment and acknowledgement is critical. So for some women, there are what we call the not modifiable, the you get what you get risk factors. That's your family history. And what's important about that is knowing it. If there was heart disease in your family, parents, first degree relatives at young ages, 50s, 60s, you should know that. And then you want to be even more aggressive. Your age is another not modifiable risk factor. The older you get, the higher your risk. Then we get to the big bucket of modifiable risk factors. And those are the things that we wanted to focus on in the book because those are the things that you can change. So they are being overweight or obese, having diabetes, high blood pressure, abnormal cholesterol, being sedentary. For women, differently than men, things like anxiety and depression have a terrible impact on the likelihood of getting heart disease. And then there's a new category of risk factors that are specific to women. So having any issue during a pregnancy, people will tell me they had gestational diabetes. You know, they failed the blood sugar test. And then it went away. Well, that's not one and done. Quote, a little hypertension, a little high blood pressure during pregnancy puts you in a different risk factor. So anything related to pregnancy, we call the failed stress test almost. So those are the things that we ask women when we see them. And finally, something that's much more prevalent in women, rheumatologic diseases, or the severe arthritises like rheumatoid arthritis or lupus, those women are at increased risk for heart disease.
Right. So, you know, I think it's so, I mean, I have yet to find a better analogy than this thing that's just about to fall out of my mouth. But when you talk about these non-modifiable sort of risk factors, the awareness of your genetic, you know, predisposition and your age, I've always said about genetics because people who will present to my practice and they have elevated cholesterol and they do have some risk factors for cardiovascular disease, they'll just look at me and just say, well, you know, it runs in my family. But as we all know, and more with the, I think, sort of like the discovery of epigenetics and nutrigenomics, I've said that, you know, your genes can sort of load the gun, and this is the bad analogy that I need a better one for, but your lifestyle can actually pull that trigger. And I love that in your book. Yeah, you've taken those modifiable ones, but I think also, you know, obviously we can't change our DNA, but we can change the way that they express themselves. And so I think that that's so important as well. So in your book, and I love this because you've really sort of, you know, kind of drawn out six steps. Talk about the six steps program in your book.
Oh, sure. You know, as you said, knowing your genes is A, number one, knowing, and knowledge really is power. And, you know, if somebody in your family had heart disease in their 40s, then you want to start getting aggressive in your 20s. And it's not one big thing. Women particularly want to do it all and perfectly, or they don't want to try. But when it comes to prevention, it is the small, consistent things that become second nature to you. And we really, when we wrote the book, we wanted this to be a practical approach. We want women and men, you know, taking notes, putting stickies on the advice pages and really finding this, you know, if not a workbook, at least something that is really usable and practical. So our first week is taking stock of your kitchen. If it's in there, you may eat things that you don't want. So it really means taking big black garbage bags and walking through your kitchen, your pantry, your refrigerator, and seeing what's good and what's bad in there. We actually had a big debate about throwing out food, which we all think is terrible. We decided throwing out Doritos is okay or something that's really horrible. But otherwise, if there's food that you shouldn't be eating, give it away, but it's still valuable food, then give it away to a soup kitchen. But walking around, taking stock of what you have, getting rid of the things that are really not right for you, and then creating a regular shopping list of foods that you should stock in your kitchen so that there's healthy oils, that there are healthy snacks, and that becomes default. You know, it's what you do every day. So that's week one. Week two is choosing to move more. And again, women, as a generality, have a tendency to do it perfectly or not at all. Moving more doesn't mean you need to buy fancy sneakers, join expensive gyms, train for the marathon. It means finding time to move more every day. And that should be a minimum of 150 hours a week, but that could be in 10-minute intervals, and that's pretty easy. You know, I always laugh. I actually just came from my office hours, and every woman's too busy. But you're well-dressed, and your makeup is on, and you know, got to work on time, you could find 10 minutes here and there throughout the week to exercise. And find something that's enjoyable so that you don't, you know, dread doing it. Maybe a tracker for some people. One of the Fitbit-like, you know, products is very helpful.
Yeah.
And we go through all of the ways to stretch and avoid injury and to really figure out how to move more.
So you mentioned, you said 100 and, you said 150 hours a week. Did you mean 150 minutes?
Minutes. Oh, I'm sorry. 150, I know. Oh, my God. Tell a woman that and it's all over. 150 minutes a week. Should be a moderate clip. So if you're just doing a walk, you know, speed it up for a couple of minutes in the walk. You know, get to the point where talking is a little bit harder. And with increasing frequency, you get conditioned. Some people like aerobic activities on bikes or swimming. Anything that gets your heart rate up is what you really want to be doing.
I love that you also drive home the whole the thing about consistency with this too, because I think there's ways that you can move more without even trying. Like anytime I go to travel, I always make sure that I never take the escalator or the elevators. I look for the stairs because I know that day I'm probably not going to be able to work out. And I grab my bag, you know, my bags, and that's going to be my workout. I always don't get on those moving sidewalk, you know, things. I just walk at a good clip trying to get my connection. And then also going to like the supermarket, you know, looking for that parking space that's usually open far, far, far away from the door. And just know that you've got those extra steps. You're moving and your blood is pumping and those vessels are getting stronger.
Absolutely. And when it becomes the norm, it just becomes something you do regularly. My clinical office is on the fourth floor. My patients, their family will see me walking up and down and they'll see me parking further. And not always, you know, it's not, again, all or none. You know, I joke, I see patients on Mondays and Tuesdays and every once in a while someone will say to me, okay, great, we'll start next Monday. I'm like, no, we're going to start today. You know, in other words, every day, every choice is an opportunity to just move more. Some people dance to music when they're cleaning in the house or, you know, you get up once an hour if you're a desk person at work, to just really find the tricks, walk to the far bathroom. You know, we do walking meetings on occasion. You know, every time you have this opportunity to get moving more, as you said, is a win.
Great. So week one, we've got taken out an inventory of that kitchen and get it and stuff out of there. Because if it's there, you're going to eat it. Week two, moving more. Week three.
Week three is eating. And you really are what you eat. And we separate it into two sections. One is eating at home. And, you know, we talk about, and there's so much competing information out there, this diet, this nutrition, what about supplements? And Soteria Everett is our RD. She was instrumental in creating this chapter. The second part is what to do when you eat out. You know, we don't imagine that you're never going to have a life and get out and socialize personally, professionally. But being prepared before you get to a restaurant, my favorite piece of advice in this chapter is to get on the website of the restaurant you're going to and look at the menu before you get there so that there's no surprises. You almost sort of plot out, you know, the best way to manage the meal. And it really feels good when you sort of get there and you've seen the menu before and, you know, you see what's the right choices for you, choosing two appetizers or sharing a portion. So it's all kinds of, again, very practical advice on preparing food at home and eating out.
Yeah. And I've always said, you know, fail to plan to fail. And I think when it comes to how you nourish yourself and getting it right, when we are decreasing risk factors or getting or using food as medicine and getting healthier, that is, you fail to plan around food. You plan to fail because it can be so overwhelming and things get fast. And, you know, we eat for so many different reasons, whether it's social or comfort. But when you're looking at decreasing heart disease, yes, doing things like looking at the menu, understanding what's good for you, what you can avoid. I love it.
I'm a big fan of mindful eating as well. You know, as you said, we eat for so many reasons, but, you know, sort of pausing, even instantaneously to decide why and what before you put something in your mouth is important. Sometimes, you know, we're eating quickly, you don't even taste it. And all of a sudden, being sure that there's an apple at your desk instead of something that's less healthy And it's just being a instantaneously more thoughtful about how you shop, how you choose your foods, and what you grab and when. You're absolutely right.
All right. Week four.
Week four is about partnering. We talk about partnering with your doctor. You know, women have a tendency, the strongest, you know, chairmen of the board, women walk in and they don't have a great relationship with their physicians. And the same woman who would fire a hairdresser for one bad haircut sort of tolerates. So you really want to be an equal partner with your physician, and that means a couple of things. Number one, you want to come prepared. You'd never go to the accountant around April 15th without having everything. And I think that it's really important that, you know, even though there's electronic records and connectivity, own your data. It's yours. You bring it with you. You understand it better. So find a doctor who you trust, and maybe that they take a couple of tries. How you do it? Ask one of your other doctors, you're like your gynecologist, your internist, your kid's pediatrician, and check the doctor out, see about insurance, you know, coverage, see if they're at a hospital that has a good reputation or aligned with a hospital, and come prepared. And then over time, come prepared for each visit. Write down questions. Bring someone with you if that would help. Get your use the time you have with the doctors, which, of course, unfortunately gets shorter and shorter, and yeah. Really maximize that appointment. And if it's somebody that you can't have a good relationship with, find somebody else. Then we talk about partnering with friends and family. Sharing the journey of heart health is, you know, really going to increase your likelihood of being successful. You know, no good friend is going to let you eat a sleeve of Girl Scout cookies, right? Or if they do, they know that they're going to get you on a treadmill an hour later. So, you know, right. This journey is lifelong, and doing it with people, you know, who should be on the journey with you absolutely enhances adherence and definitely makes it more enjoyable and fun. It's less of a chore that way.
I love that stuff because, you know, I've always said that awareness is power, but self-awareness is superpower. And when you've got something going on, instead of just deferring to your doctor and like, oh, my doctor told me to do this, it's like, no, This is my body. This is my life. I'm partnering with my doctor. They mentioned this, but I'm going to do this. Even if it's like, you know, the video on my website on the front page says this, it's all about my number one health tip, which is I statements, you know, being able to say,
right.
You know, my doctor prescribed this, I'm choosing to take it. And I know why this is going to help me X,
correct.
Y, and Z, because
correct.
Then you said, own your data, own your choices, own your body, own your life. I love it.
And it really has to be a partnership. In fact, you know, there is so much out there, and some of it is valuable. Some of it may be a little less so. And those are other questions to ask your doctor. Where can I, you know, nobody should ever be afraid to ask a doctor for a second opinion. I love giving second opinions. There's nothing black and white in medicine. I also have my favorite websites to send patients to so that they can read ahead of time. And it really is a partnership. And there have been patients who have not found me to be the perfect doctor. That's fine. I've had to fire physicians in the past. You really want someone who's, you know, going to take the ride with you. It's really important.
All right. Two more steps.
Week five.
Yeah.
Okay. Week five is our S's. Sleep more, stress less, and savor life. So lack of sleep used to be this macho badge of, you know, I only need a little sleep. I'll meet you at a 6:30 meeting. You know, that's a waste of time, I've even heard. But the truth is, the science around inadequate sleep should terrify everybody. Not sleeping well impacts on blood sugar and the metabolic syndrome. It raises your blood pressure. It has an abnormal effect on your lipids. Forget the fact that your concentration is shot. You're literally like driving drunk if you don't have good sleep. The effects on the heart have been clearly demonstrated. So sleep is important. It is not something that should not be thought about. And there are some medical conditions that prevent good sleep that need to be evaluated, and doctors should ask about it. And each patient should go and be prepared to give, you know, their history if they're not having good sleep. There are medical conditions that could prevent it that sometimes need to be evaluated. And sometimes it's what we call sleep hygiene. Sleeping with the TV on, two phones next to you, and a Kindle on your lap is not going to get you a good night's sleep. So respecting the importance of sleep really is manageable. Stress, yes, it matters. Stress is not what happens to you. Stress is how you manage what's going on in your life. You know, there are those people who have the smallest thing go wrong and it puts them, you know, really out of sorts, and others who have real heartache in their lives and have learned to manage it. And there are tricks, whether it's mindfulness techniques, whether it's yoga classes, whether it's seeking, you know, help from a behavioral health professional, but not to minimize the effect on that. And savoring life, we think when you laugh more, when you enjoy life, your heart loves it. Whether that's laughing with girlfriends, listening to music, watching a silly TV show, but just really pausing and taking some time to enjoy life. That is week five. And week six just puts it all together. You know, how do you take this program and make it what you do every day, as opposed to something that you do for just a short period of time and then it goes away? Those are a success.
Yeah, that's great. It's so wonderful. And so, you know, you talk about certain ethnic groups because, you know, you were mentioning non-modifiable risk factors versus modifiable risk factors, taking all that up. But what about the certain ethnic groups being affected by heart disease?
Yeah, no, it's very important. And much in the same way that we realize heart disease in women is different, we realize that in different race and ethnicities. So African-American women are more likely to have high blood pressure than non-Hispanic whites, than whites in the U.S. And they are much more likely to have the negative impacts, whether it's heart failure, stroke or mini strokes. Latinas are much more affected by diabetes. And it's not just that they are more likely to have diabetes, it's that diabetes in Hispanics is a much more potent risk factor. South Asians, particularly Indians from certain areas of India, Southeast Asia, have unusual lipid panels that need to be evaluated, and certain communities have much higher levels of premature heart attack and stroke. So again, it's not one size fits all. You're who you are. And when your doctor is evaluating your unique risk factors and your unique, you know, ways to approach these, it's got to be about who you are, what your family history, race, ethnicity, all of it. Great question.
Yeah, that's really important. And, you know, I love your approach. Because you're a cardiologist, you're an MD, and I've always just been a naturopathic doctor, but I still, there's such value in any system of medicine. And, you know, but when we talk about heart disease and its prevalence, you know, and just once again, that three women will die of heart disease, higher than all types of cancer fatalities. You know, your book is gentle in the fact that it gives more support and information than just here, take this. I grew up the daughter of two pharmacists and was very well versed in here, take this medicine. Because, you know, if what I see in my practice certainly is when people, you know, they get their yearly blood work back and whether they're starting, you know, sort of insulin resistance or metabolic disease or their, you know, hyperlipidemia with their lipid panels being elevated, they end up being put on a medication and that's it. And I love the fact that you are talking about these things in the, you know, in much more comprehensive ways. And it's weird because here, take this as easy medicine, diet modification, getting moving more. It takes that buy-in, but I think it's far more effective. All right. We've got 2 minutes left. Where can folks find out more information about your book?
Oh, the book is on Amazon. And I think the digital version is on Barnes & Noble as well.
Okay. Right.
And for anyone who does purchase it on Amazon, we'd love to hear back from you.
Of course.
Let us know what you like, what works. We've actually got a website as well, and we look to be very communicative for patients and community members to sort of give us advice, because we really want this to be a living, you know, living document for us.
So, and the website, Dr. Rosen, is?
HeartSmartMovement.
Yay.com?
Yes.
Okay, so folks, you ladies, you have to heart your heart, okay? You have to heart your heart. It's really important.
Absolutely.
And Dr. Stacey Rosen and company makes it so much easier. Brand new book out, Heart Smart for Women. You can find it on Amazon, digital version on Barnes and Nobles, and then Heart Smart Movement. Keep on moving. And mindful listeners, just open up your mind. Know that here, take this is not, you know, hitting the mark anymore when it comes to heart disease. It's still the number one killer. Not the full picture, but Dr. Stacey Rosen, thank you for your work and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure and thanks for getting the word out.
You bet. Okay, ladies, my mindful listeners, until next time.